How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. Hope you had a nice weekend. Enjoyed the weather because today in particular is not going to be, it's a bit of a nasty day. It's wet. We've had some light snow in areas of the city earlier this morning. Most of the day is just going to be showers and rain and only 3 degrees. It gets gradually better. Tomorrow, not much warmer, but there'll be some sunshine around. By the end of the week, we should be up to more normal temperatures for this time of year, is around 8 or 9 degrees. All right, later on, we'll have this day in sports history. We'll have Duke Ellington. We'll be by to talk NFL. And we're going to talk some World Series in just a second and put a wrap on that incredible Rays win. I know the Dodgers won last night's more recent history, but that Rays win on Saturday night was something else. That was an incredible baseball game. But we haven't talked at all about Khabib's big win at UFC. Was it
254
on Saturday afternoon, our time, and then announcing his retirement. So, I mean, is this a Conor McGregor, I'm retiring for the third time, nobody's believing him retirement, or is this an actual retirement?
Actually, Simmer and I were just talking about this. When he brings up his mother and the fact that he promised his mother after his dad's passing that this will be the last fight, because his mother doesn't like him fighting without his father around, without his father in his corner, who was there every fight that he's had. So he promised his mom, this is it. This will be the last fight. So I honestly believe that he's not going to fight again.
Until he pushes the check that Dana White is ready to give him for the next fight.
Simmer's got a hypothesis on when he's going to fight again.
I was just looking up his hometown, and he's in a very remote area of southern Russia near Georgia. I'm not going to go with that because I don't think Vladdy Putin's going to show up. But yeah, he's tagged this one for Moscow, the big event in the homeland, and that'll be cash everywhere, and that'll end up drawing him back. But when he talked about his father not being in his corner, but also, and the city he's from is a really thriving area. He's probably going to a very high-paying job. Yeah.
So who is the natural opponent for him next time? Where is the most money to be made? I mean,
GSP. Yes. GSP, that's what everybody's talking about.
Really?
That would be it. Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
Who hasn't fought in how long?
I think that would have been...
Is it 3 years?
Yeah, and that's when he moved up into light heavyweight. And when he won the title and then immediately handed it back.
GSP is still that much of a draw, eh?
Absolutely.
This long out of the game.
Heck yeah.
Right.
Around the world. We're just not talking North America.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking worldwide. Yeah.
Did he win his last fight, Hammer?
Yes, he did.
And that is, to me, the biggest thing is, I guess, with any sport, especially boxing, MMA, like, Conor McGregor is like, whatever, you know, shut your pie hole. You're not even any good
anymore. Well, he's going to fight in January, so we'll see.
But there's no excitement to that anymore, is there?
I still think so. I think there's still a bit of a circus attraction to it just because of...
He feels like Mike Tyson at the end, where the first round of that Holyfield fight, you're like, I don't think this guy has it anymore, so I'm not feeling...
This is him trying to build his name back up, right, after a couple of losses and getting destroyed by Khabib. So now he's got Dustin Poirier, who was previously dispatched by Khabib as well, so these are two guys looking to try to make a name for themselves, and now they've got the belts out there right now. Khabib has given it back, so... There's something to fight for, so I think that's what you're going to see.
All right, so if Khabib is on hiatus, we'll say for now, with a potential fight down the road with GSP, if he does not remain retired.
I think it's going to be tough.
What is the next big matchup that everybody's looking forward to?
I think the next big one, you'll be seeing John Jones probably move up to heavyweight and taking on the heavyweight champion there who just beat Johnson again to win that triple threat. So and
is
I
that
can't
John re- Bones Jones?
John Bones
nice.
Jones.
JR bringing it. As far as a breakdown of the fight on Saturday, Hammer, the other fella said he was going to kick this guy quite a bit in the legs.
Yeah.
Did we see a lot of kickage?
No, we did not see. We saw a lot of attempts. It was where Gaethje was. Man, he looked gassed.
He was nervous going up. You could just
absolutely
see in the press conference when the one guy's talking and the other guy just looks like, I said, he looks like Ivan Drago and Mike Tyson in their prime, and then the other fella's talking a good game.
Well, when you try to kick a wrestler, your worry is he's going to catch that leg and then he's going to take you down and it's going to be done.
So I
think I saw one little love tap, but he didn't even chuck knucks at all, hardly. And then finally in the second round, Nurmagomedov got him down, got him into a nice little leg lock, a little scissor, and they got him in the arm bar, and that was it.
JR, you know what I'm just thinking here? And because Hammer's from Belleville, and not that, that's great, but it's a tough town. We got to bring back to make a little cash on the side during tough times. Remember in Ottawa when they started that You Think You're Tough? Hey, remember those contests? Can you get insurance for that anymore?
We're talking about like street fights?
No, no. Remember they used to have open events.
Fight Club?
Oh, you'd come out and box, like a New York, you know, and it was called You Think You're Tough.
Really?
Because you had a lot of these Yahoos that thought, oh, that's easy. I'll get in there. And,
like with gloves.
Oh, yeah.
Not bare knuckle.
No, not bare knuckle. But I wonder if we can get insured.
Maybe we get some rooster fights.
Well, we could even, you know what would be nice in Bell Media here? We could have the ring right downstairs.
We got lots of room.
We could have everybody around the top, almost like Bloodsport.
Oh,
Hammer,
yeah.
Right?
Like that.
Right? Huh? Little area there, right over the railing. Right over the railing.
Is that what you want
yeah,
to do?
Absolutely.
So people that would have paid their however much the pay-per-view, would they have been satisfied with the second round submission? Was the undercard decent?
To be quite honest, we weren't paying that much attention. We were chit-chatting that because there wasn't really a great undercard. The Whitaker fight was decent, but...
That Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah. No, not Forrest
Sweet
Whitaker.
Lou.
That's the actor.
The former Tigers second baseman from 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Can you? Did I hear accurate? Bunda said yesterday this went on for 6 hours. Is that accurate, Hammer?
The entire card?
The entire card. Well, maybe with the undercard, yeah.
Bunda said he started watching at 11 a.m. I thought, you know, for two for Tuesday chicken, how
Hang
many
on,
wings?
Bunda was working at 11 a.m. What is his co-hosting TSN weekend?
Oh,
what?
Okay.
I never heard that part of it.
Dark matches, and then you've got the undercard, which started at noon, and then you had the main event that started at 2.
What are dark matches?
The really undercard.
That's the rooster fighting?
That's the rooster fighting.
Okay, with humans? Rooster fighting with humans is known as the dark
That's
card?
Trying to make a name for myself, trying to maybe get a contract, not actually having a contract yet, maybe pick me up off the beach in Abu Dhabi,
gotcha.
And let's go fight.
All right. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the NFL week. We got one more game to go tonight. Should be a decent affair. Tilt between the Bears and the Rams, but an interesting day yesterday. We had 3 unbeaten teams going in. We got 1 unbeaten team coming out. We're going to talk football with Duke Ellingson when we come back on TSN 1200.
This time he lost one and it's picked off at the goal line. That's Buda Baker. Buda Baker out in front. Can Metcalf track him down? Can he chase him down? And he does to save a touchdown.
Well, I think if you're looking for a signature play from the weekend, and I mean, we had game-winning touchdowns, overtimes, kicks, whatever, it was maybe DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker to save a touchdown in the Seattle-Arizona game last night. And it was a game that Seattle ended up losing at the end of the day anyway. But what a play that was, and I'm sure we'll have people talking today.
Yeah, and had me working late into the night. I went back and tracked our next guest and found some video of him, and I put him next to DJ Metcalf as a member of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and I got to tell you, pretty tight race between Duke and DJ.
Yes,
or DK or whoever
DK. And more with, I think Duke hit his prime in the Saskatchewan years, for sure.
Well, I was just guessing on teams, but most guys play on all the teams, so
you would have been good with just saying Rough Riders.
Okay.
Joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, we say good morning to Duke Ellingson. How are you this morning, Duke?
I'm well, and I was just saying to Hamer there that I asked him in my prime, I was not today, of course, but in my prime, who would he take in a 40 between me and DK? After some analysis, he decided to stay with DK.
What was your 40, Duke? Like, did they do that back in the day?
How old do you think?
Wow, I don't know.
No kidding.
Unbelievable.
You know, in the 1800s, Duke, when you played...
He erased horses against the horse.
It was a lot easier with the leather helmets and no face.
Okay, what was it then? What was your time?
Probably low 4.6.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Not bad.
So what did you, I just thought that was an amazing play. Just all around for him not to give up on it. The hustle. I mean, Baker is going like nobody's. How much faster can you run without a football in your arm than with a football? Is there that much of a difference?
Well, I don't think it's that much of a difference, you know. But what impressed me, obviously, you know, not just the fact that he has the physical ability to do that, to run that fast, and to, you know, it was the effort. I mean, let's not forget, was it 2-3 weeks ago in the game at home? Was it against Dallas where he stopped running, you know, 3 yards before the end zone, and he took a lot of flack for it. And Russell Wilson said, you know, basically, this isn't going to happen again. And I think that was such a great juxtaposition of the learning of this kid saying, you know what, I made a mistake, I kind of let up, and now I'm going to, you know, play every play like it's the last play I'll play. And he took off. And, I mean, you saw him as soon as he saw the interception. He was full speed. And so he kind of, he saw it happening, and he took off. And so it was just, I mean, it was an amazing thing to watch, but I was just really impressed with the effort. And that's the kind of thing that teammates absolutely love.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier this morning. And I think, Duke, and I don't have his DK Metcalf's 40 time in front of me. I know he tested as a great athlete, but that to me was an example of there's 40 fast and there's football fast. That was football fast last night.
Absolutely. I mean, Jerry Rice, when he came out back in the day, I think his 40 time was really quite pedestrian for wide receivers. And a lot of teams, you know, combined with the fact that he played at such a small school, thought, you know, he's not physically built to play or to be a star or whatever. And we all know what happened. And you watch highlights of Jerry Rice, to your point. I can't remember if he ever got caught from behind with a football in his hand. So
Yep. You're
absolutely right. Football speed is very different from just, track speed.
I want to get your thoughts before we kind of go around the games, because Adam Schefter has just tweeted out John Bostic, the Washington linebacker,
that
put the hit on Andy Dalton, which knocked him out of the game yesterday, which everybody agrees was a dirty, dirty hit, got him ejected. Simmer said earlier this morning, 5-game suspension. Adam Schefter just said he will not be suspended.
Wow.
Are you surprised at that?
Oh, absolutely shocked. Absolutely shocked. I mean, that hit is everything that the NFL and football in general have been trying to get out of the game for a couple of years now. And I mean, the fact that he got thrown out was absolutely the right call. And I'm shocked at it. I'll be very interested to see if maybe the Washington football team does something on their own and maybe sending a bit of a message in terms, because Ron Rivera said last night that he contacted Mike McCarthy afterwards and sort of made that comment that you hear a lot, right? That's not the way our team plays, but perhaps he needs to make a statement internally and suspend him at least for a couple of games. And, you know, and the other side of that equation, and just kind of back to what Simmer had said a couple of weeks ago with Aaron Rodgers, where was the Dallas Cowboy offensive line or anybody else coming in and taking care of business there after that hit?
And that is funny, Duke, you say that. And I didn't mean he gets suspended for 5. That's what I would do. I thought maybe 1. Here is a coach that was called out by his players post-game. He's calling out the Dallas Cowboys players. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's a disaster. I mean, your point a couple of weeks ago is it's really about standing up for your teammates. And you know when you've got a team, when you see a DK Metcalf do what he did last night, you know you've got guys playing for each other. And you know, you see what happened to Dalton, and not one guy does anything about it. That says, that speaks volumes. And so that whole team right now is a complete train wreck. And, you got stars that are, really not pulling their weight, especially Ezekiel Elliott. And you've got a bunch of guys that right now are just pointing fingers.
And basically a month from now, those teams play again. I mean, the NFL's not sick enough to actually want to have this, are they? I mean, I'm assuming something's going to happen in the game.
Well, you would be surprised if it doesn't, and to that point, maybe that's something that the Washington team needs to figure out is what do you do in that game with him. And I don't know, it's a black eye for the league, and certainly a black eye for the Cowboys.
All right, Duke, we're talking to Duke Ellington, reviewing Week 7 of the NFL. We have not very often, but buried the New England Patriots at various times in the last 20 years. This time, are we ready to kind of put the shovel in the dirt a little bit on this season? Or still, do you hold out some hope that somehow, some way, through the magic of the hoodie, they're going to be able to turn this around?
You know what? I think the biggest difference in the last 20 years, and you're right, it's happened early in the season a couple of times. It's happened mid-season. We go back to the whole, we're on to Cincinnati year, a bit later in the season. But the big difference is, in those years, they had Tom Brady and they had offensive playmakers. Not a lot of them, but enough. And you had Gronkowski, you had tight ends. And right now, this team, I read something earlier in the week where an AFC scout said New England has the least amount of playmakers in the NFL on offense. And one team is afraid of them, and they can just play one safety high and they can spy Cam Newton, and they're not afraid of any of those receivers. So I think that's the biggest difference. I mean, we've said this before, a lot of teams have injuries, a lot of teams have lost players that opted out for COVID, and New England's no different, but they just don't have enough guys that can play at the receiver position in the NFL, and they literally don't have a tight end. And you guys have seen, if you watch all the highlights yesterday of all the teams that have had, you know, tremendous success on offense, all of them have an athletic, or more than one sometimes, athletic tight end Patriots have neither.
It was National Tight End Day as well, so exactly. a lot of love for that.
Big fan of the tight ends.
Bill Cowher just talked about that. As crazy as and Edelman, first of all, should retire, has had a great career. You look at the Dallas situation, no quarterback. If you're the Patriots, would you ever look at moving Cam Newton if anybody was calling?
Oh, wow. I mean,
does he have value? Might be another question.
Yeah. I mean,
well, who would Dallas use now would be my only thought.
Ryan Fitzpatrick would be a natural trade option,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Right, for sure. You know, I read something just this morning about, you know, would the Cowboys sign a Colin Kaepernick after all that has happened. But, no, I mean, I think you have to lay at least some of the blame at Cam Newton's feet for the last couple of weeks. I mean, if anybody watched the game yesterday, total inaccurate. From the pocket, and if you look back at what made New England so successful all those years, it was obviously Tom Brady's decision making, but also ball security. I mean, that team never turned the ball over, never put themselves in tough positions, and I think Newton's thrown something like 3 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, or the team in total has thrown 3 touchdown passes and has 11 interceptions. You don't win in the NFL with those kinds of numbers.
If Tom Brady was quarterbacking the New England Patriots and everything else was the same, would their record still be 2-4?
Absolutely not. I mean, the way they played in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago, the defense played so heroically and held them, I think 19 points offensively, and they turned it over a number of times, missed some field goals. If Brady plays in that game, they'd probably win, and I think they would win last week. You're not going to lose to Denver at home when they don't even score a touchdown on you. So absolutely, I think Tom Brady would make the difference.
Do you think that Tom Brady looked at, and look, he there weren't many more playmakers last season than there are this season. Do you think he looked at it and just basically said, without this coming public, you know what? I need to move on. If I want to win another Super Bowl, I can't stay in New England any longer. I need to move somewhere with some playmakers.
I think that had a huge, I mean, and the fact that he ended up in Tampa Bay, I mean, we know there were talks and rumors about different places where he could go. But you look at what Tampa Bay has, and that's obviously before Antonio Brown gets signed, and, you know, you look at the defense in Tampa Bay, and he absolutely targeted that organization because it gives him the best chance in a very, very quick closing window to maybe get to or maybe win one more Super Bowl.
And I think he's actually relaxed now, Duke, that the Pats are doing poorly. And does it look like he, along with Gronk and everybody else on that offensive side, hit their stride in Tampa?
Well, I mean, it's, yeah. You wonder what he's thinking on the flight home last night when he kind of finds out what happened in New England yesterday and sees the numbers, the ineptitude of that offense, and looks at what he's done so far in Tampa Bay. I mean, you know, he is pretty sure he's made the right decision.
We're talking football with Duke Ellington. So you brought up Antonio Brown, who rumor was that Seattle wanted to bring him in. He ends up going to Tampa Bay, and Bruce Arians kind of claimed it was his decision. But you have to think that Brady had a big role in trying to bring him there. At the end of the day, do you think that's the right thing to do, given the fact of how well that offense is working right now, and you're bringing in someone potentially who could disrupt what seems to be pretty good chemistry, right?
Currently? You know what? I think it's very risky. You know, Antonio Brown has gone kind of strangely silent over the last couple of months, but. You know, nobody's quite sure exactly what's going on there and how he's going to be in that locker room. And you're absolutely right. I think it's not ended well the last couple of times and the last couple of places he's landed. And I think if you're a betting person, you would suggest that something's going to go wrong there, you know, in Tampa Bay as well. Now, maybe he's learned his lesson. Maybe he realizes he's literally on his last strike. And maybe that's the best place for him where he's got a quarterback who 100% kind of endorses him or believes in him, but I just think it's a huge risk from a chemistry standpoint. Now they do have injuries, and all of their key receivers have been hurt and are playing hurt, so I get that. But wow, that's going to be very interesting to see how that thing plays out.
I understand as an athlete, you kind of look the other way, Duke. You want to win. It's just football. But do you find it a little strange that he's befriended this guy? I mean, in Boston, he was living at his place. Or is this just the way to try to get the max out of him and maybe keep him on his best behavior?
Well, cynically, I think everybody that doesn't like Tom Brady would suggest it's more just about winning and how he can get the best guys on the field to help him do that. You know, in the past, though, in fairness to him, he has kind of taken guys like Randy Moss and even when Aqib Talib was in New England, there was a lot of problems there, and apparently Tom Brady took a lot of time with him as well. So he has a bit of a history of maybe trying to rescue guys, but at the same time, you definitely know he wouldn't be doing this if Antonio Brown wasn't an All-Pro.
Right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers, after the play yesterday, the only unbeaten team left. They're 6-0. If we had a playoff right now, would the Pittsburgh Steelers win the Super Bowl? Are they the best team in football?
You know, I heard a bunch of people talking about this last night, and everybody still wants to give that title to Kansas City, and I get it. They have such a wealth of weapons offensively, and they've got Patrick Mahomes, and they're the defending champs. But if you look around the NFL and the number of points being scored around the league, there are very few teams that are playing defense kind of the way maybe we all think defense should be played and are capable of slowing teams down. And so I think right now, Kansas City, after what I just said, has not been incredibly dominant. Mahomes certainly hasn't been running roughshod like he has the last couple of years in terms of stats. So, you know, I think there are ways teams have found to contain Mahomes, and I think obviously if you can run the ball and be effective offensively, you can keep them off the field. So all that to say, I think I would give Pittsburgh every bit of an opportunity, to win the AFC. Obviously, home field is going to play a huge role in that.
Thoughts on Kyler Murray and a surprising Arizona club?
JR talked about it last week about whether he's going to become an elite or superstar quarterback. And I don't know, you guys probably watched most of the game last night too, but he looks like he, when you watch him run, it's like he's on fast forward compared to everybody else. And he's just the things he gets out of and the way he makes plays is just remarkable. And yeah, I mean, that's another team though that struggles defensively, as does Seattle. And that's why I think maybe, both of those teams at the end of the day, may struggle to get over the top. But no, Kyler Murray, just so much fun to watch, and he's only going to get better.
All right. Well, what do you got tonight, Bears? And are you a believer in the 5-1 Bears or not?
It's easy to say no because of the way they've won and maybe even some of the teams they've won against. But you talk about another team that can play some defense. They're really, really good. They might be top three. They are top three defense in the NFL, which is why they've been able to win five games with that offense. But, yeah, you know what? People that jump on the Rams maybe just want to be careful that their four wins have all come against NFC East so far this year. So, just bear that in mind tonight when you're watching, just because they're at home and just because they're kind of sexy. I think if they win, it's going to be by the shortest of margins.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate the insights as always, Duke. Thanks.
All right, guys, have a great day.
There's Duke Ellingson joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. We'll have Bears and Rams for you tonight. 7:30 pregame show, 8:15 kickoff. Bears are 5-1. Rams are 4-2. Should be a good game. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. More on the World Series, and we'll look at this day in sports history, celebrate some sports birthdays as well. Not that there's a lot. October 26th, pretty lean day as far as celebrity sports birthdays go. We'll get into all that. And one more chance for you to qualify in our Pizza for a Year contest with Gabriel Pizza. So stand by. Your cue to call is coming up in the next 30 minutes on TSN 1200. Welcome back, 9:40 on a wet Monday morning. And congratulations, by the way, in the last hour. I don't think I congratulated Peter, who was our qualifier from last hour in our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest. So, Peter, good luck in the daily draw tomorrow and the grand prize draw as well. And right now, Hammer's just going through the phones to get caller 32,
yeah.
So stand by on that.
I thought you would have went, and I wouldn't know it, but I thought you were going to go with Rick Monday's actual number versus it being a Monday and the Dodgers winning. But I guess since they won in 88, that doesn't relate back to whatever year that was with Rick Monday.
All right, he just found, and by the way, I've got a connection to Blue Monday and Rick Monday.
Wow.
As part of our celebrity birthdays on this day.
Nice.
Coincidentally enough.
Oh, solid enough.
Yeah.
I was just going through also while we were at commercial break, going through my power rankings. I wanted to ask you, because I know you're a big fan, who you ranking as the best Formula One driver of all time after Mr. Hamilton broke the record with his 92nd.
I'm going Michael Schumacher.
Oh, Schumacher?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, I'm not feeling that one, but that's okay. That's okay. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm always going with Senna, and that'll go back to my documentary life. Unfortunately, he passed away. It was funny to go through some of the names there. My only real thing into that is, I guess, Jacques Villeneuve, and then watching the movie Rush and watching the Senna documentary. But that was pretty cool to see him. And I thought symbolically interesting, JR, also that a black athlete in a predominantly white sport is now the greatest of all time, which timing-wise was pretty good as well.
Yes. I have a Jacques Villeneuve today in sports history angle as well. It's like this is all fitting together.
You and Hammer get home. You're going to watch Man versus the Machine. Then we're going to break her down tomorrow.
I'm still getting through season one of Bloodlines, okay? And it's taken me 2 months already.
And I've got three more episodes of The Staircase, and it is
It's only four episodes
mystery.
Long.
And it's 13.
No, and Hammer fired down Borat on the weekend, JR.
Yeah.
Mira and I hunkered down without the boys being around, tried to get through it. Yeah, man, I didn't.
Not as good as number one?
No, not even close.
I just wasn't feeling any of it. We couldn't get through the movie. I don't know. Huh. It's very repetitive, and I don't know. I think you got to be on a little something to enjoy it, because I just wasn't feeling the humor.
All right. Steve, by the way. Steve was caller 32. Congratulations to you, Steve. Caller 32. So Steve is our second qualifier. You got three more chances to qualify in our TSN 1200 Pizza for a Year contest. One coming up on In the Box, and then twice more on the drive. All right. So the Dodgers won last night 4-2 over the Rays. They're a win away from clinching their first World Series victory since 1988. That game, and it was good. It was a good game. Don't get me wrong. We had an attempted steal of home, which was probably the moment of the game last night, but it really paled in comparison to what went down on Saturday night, which is one of the best baseball games. And I've not watched a ton of baseball, but one of the best ball games I've seen in a long, long time. The Rays, a big comeback win, which actually transpired in the bottom of the ninth inning. They were down by one. Brett Phillips was the 28th player on the 28-man roster of the Tampa Bay Rays when he came through in the ninth inning, in the bottom of the ninth inning, to deliver that victory. And then I thought afterward gave one of the best post-game interviews I've ever heard.
It took you several minutes to gather yourself just now. What happened?
Oh, man. I'm having a hard time putting my emotions into words. First of all, what a great team effort on this win. It took almost 28 guys. That's what's special about this team. Just all come together for one goal, is to win. We don't rely on one guy. It takes everyone, and man, baseball is fun. Wow.
Did you see the game coming to you?
Yeah, you know, an inning before, I saw we're running out of bench guys. Maybe use me to pinch run, steal bag. There, I'm going for Choi. Next thing you know, I'm fifth in the lineup coming into the tunnel. Hoover looks over at me. Hey, you're coming up fifth. Let's go win this thing. I said, you already know. Let's go. Golly. What a special moment. I just want to thank God for the opportunity.
Now, Kenley Jansen, Brett, you get down two strikes. What's going through your mind that at bat?
I was just trying to slow things down. You know, obviously myself being a high-energy player, and moments like that, sometimes it's tough to slow down, but God willing, I was able to get a good pitch there and help the team win just like everyone else did tonight.
Finally, did you see all the craziness with Randy scoring?
You know, I honestly, it's hard to believe right now that things are going like that just happened. Once I saw Randy slip, I was like, oh, shoot, at least we tied it up. And then he missed the ball. I don't know what happened, but then he scored. And next thing I know, I'm airplaning around the outfield, and I get dogpiled, and here I am talking to the boys.
Brett, congratulations, man.
Thank you, guys.
Enjoy it.
Appreciate All right, so that was the awesome interview that Ken Rosenthal from Fox did with Brett Phillips, the unlikely Game 4 hero. And listen, I thought that was a great interview, but if you actually watch it as well, there are just moments in time in which you can tell he just kind of briefly stops and he's going, what did I just do tonight? I can't believe I did what I just did. And the guy, you know, baseball is so much fun and golly and all that stuff. I thought it was such encapsulated.
Yeah.
Just kind of those great unlikely moments that we love in sports.
Yeah. And hey, when you're 26 year old and you're not overly talented, you're onto your third team, JR, hey, there becomes an appreciation, and that quickly, to just understand this might be the peak of it right now. Little let down, you end up losing game five, but for the moment there, as you said, great interview, and you appreciate it for these guys that it's not handed to him, and he's hung around, and as of that moment, you thought might end up winning a world championship.
So the Rays have been the comeback kids so far in this season. series. Lost game one, won game two, lost game three, won game four, lost game five last night. So we'll see if they can come back and even the series. Tomorrow night is game six. World Series is will be on the line for the Dodgers. By the way, the last 14 times the team has gone to a game six with a chance to win, eight times out of 14, the team that's been down in the series has come back to win. Now, in I haven't looked at it closely enough to, because as you said, normally they go 2-3-2, right?
Yeah,
so is the team going back home for six and seven, getting home field advantage for both? Is that is that speak to those eight times that? But it just goes to show you, it's hard to close a team out.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of it, JR. I would assume being the home team feels good, but if you're the team, you know, if the home team, my point is up 3-2 and you lose game six, I think all the pressure shifts for game seven, right? But what I would think would be, well, advantage in any sports, but boy, the baseball crowds as you get going and you get into games and you get later in games and you feel, I think you might feel that energy more than any other sport. A late inning baseball game, your home team, your pitchers on the mound, I think that energy really transfers to the players.
All right. 9:48, quick text. Agree totally with Simmer and Hammer on Borat. Really forced humor, not as fresh or funny as the first. He jumped the shark big time.
So yeah.
The whole you know, last week, the whole thing with Rudy Giuliani, right? That I never saw anything else but that clip. And it's kind of like, well,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And whatever you think of that, or whether it was taken out of context or whether it's actually true or not, that part we don't know.
Yeah.
If that's the thing you want to put out there as the here's the gotcha moment. I mean, what made the first Borat funny, the first Borat movie good, was that it was funny. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, the timing of it, even got a shout.
It's just in comedy should be funny.
But even, you know, hey, and I don't know, Hammer, and Hammer had said, well, it went right to Amazon Prime, JR. I don't know if that's part of the times or, as Hammer said, watching it, maybe that's the level of the movie. But in trying to generate whatever, I mean, you got Donald Trump taking runs at him on the weekend. Oh, I think any, for how bad it was, Hammer, I think any publicity at this point is good publicity to draw somebody to Amazon and end up watching it.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, you're going to find a lot of people jumped on Amazon Prime, paid for it just to watch this and then reap the benefits for the year. But yeah, it was just pushed and stressed, and there was maybe three funny moments. And then the Rudy Giuliani thing was, well, because you heard about it, it was a little anticlimactic. You knew it was coming. You were waiting for it, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, yeah, I get Rudy Giuliani and tucking in my shirt and whatnot, but yeah, by the end of it, it just seemed to drag on and on and on, looking for an ending.
And also, I'd say, JR, the times. Like, if you had in any time in American history or world history introduced the cast of characters that Donald Trump has brought along with him, along with, and I'll say this back to September 11th, Rudy Giuliani was amongst the most respected mayors, certainly, or the most respected mayor, you know, and even what he had done for New York City as far as being a district attorney was credited for cleaning up the city. The guy looked like a complete moron in the last couple of years being interviewed, right?
Yeah.
And that in itself was kind of sad, but you just go down the list of characters that have been involved in this election. Like I said, you can't make it up.
All right, we're 8 days away from the U.S. election.
Yeah.
All right, 9:50. Let's look at this day in sports history, shall we? This October the 26th. We'll start with that. Speaking of World Series, back in 1985, so this is the 35th anniversary of one of the most controversial moments in World Series history. It's Game 6 between the Cardinals and the Kansas City Royals. The Cardinals are up in the series 3-2. We don't have it? No? Okay. Cardinals are up in the series 3-2. There's a controversial play at first base in which Don Denkinger, the umpire, blew a call. He announced George Orta was safe when he was actually out. Of course, they didn't have instant review back then. And eventually Orta would come around to score the game-winning run. The Royals won the game, and then we came back and won Game 7 as well. So that happened on this day in 1985.
Yeah, and I guess all I can think of is was Kansas City back in the day. It would have been George Brett, right? And for the Cardinals, and if you're an Expos fan, pretty familiar with a star-studded lineup that they had mid-'80s.
Also on this day in 1985, the Montreal Canadiens announced the retirement of Doug Harvey's number two, the legendary defenseman from back in the 1960s.
And the positive of that story, Jared, at the time, was he working in a stable here in Ottawa, almost homeless?
Yeah, like, I know, like, he'd run into hard times.
Yeah, he really
sure
had. And boy, the Montreal Canadiens grabbed a hold of him and as an alumni member, and I think the rest of the way really took care of one of their great players.
On this day in 1990, Wayne Gretzky became the first player in NHL history to reach 2,000 career points. It came with an assist when he was playing for the Kings and a road loss to the Winnipeg Jets. He would eventually end up with, of course, let's see here. Well, he scored those 2,000 points in 857 games.
Oh, I know.
It's incredible.
The stat a while ago, and I don't know if it's been eclipsed, but did he at one point have more assists than anybody else had points?
That actually happened on this day in history. I'm going to get to that.
Okay, but has that been eclipsed, Jared?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Would
it have been by Mario? Or is it Messier? There's different splits that you have, and you're trying to kind of, you know, like when you look back, and this is the other thing with him, this must be a decision because he wanted to change it up to have some fun. When you think about Wayne Gretzky when he came to the league, I always think of him as a playmaker, right? And good playmaker, but doesn't score. Yeah, I'll go out and score 90. Is it 92 goals?
Yeah. Hey? On this, Mario had 87 one year. 87? Yeah. I think it was 87. In 1995, Mario hit 500 goals for his career on this date. The 20th person in NHL history to do that. He did it in his 605th game only. Wayne Gretzky scored 500 goals faster than Mario Lemieux.
Yeah, and that is when you look kind of break it down with Mario and the back injuries and then the cancer and the shorter careers, just the understanding of the points per game. That gives you a better appreciation for his numbers.
On this day in 1996, the New York Yankees beat the Atlanta Braves 3-2 in Game 6 to win their 23rd World Series title. But first in 18 years, the MVP was coffee drinker extraordinaire John Wetland, the former Montreal Expo.
Okay,
the Yankees closer at that time was the MVP.
Wow, had no idea. Still remember that name from the Expos days, though.
On this day in 1997, a year later, the World Series was also decided. It did not involve the New York Yankees. They won 4-5. They didn't win the one in 97. That was the one between the Florida Marlins and the Cleveland Indians. Tony Fernandez made an error in the bottom of the ninth inning that allowed the Marlins to get the winning run in position to score.
The 0-1 pitch. A liner off Nagy's glove into center field. The Florida Marlins have won the World Series.
That was the fifth year of the Florida Marlins' existence. They won the World Series in 5 years.
Yeah, was it Edgar Renteria that was coming home there? Former Portland Sea Dog.
I
brought that up a few weeks ago. And those Cleveland Indians teams, guys, for a long time. First of all, tragedy, but hey, that you talk about franchises, inability to get over the hump. Those Cleveland teams in the 90s, you got to put them right there. They had some great teams.
On this day, and also the same day, 1997, three significant things happened on this day, October 26, 1997. Jacques Villeneuve finished third in the European Grand Prix in Spain to clinch the overall championship ahead of Michael Schumacher, of course, the first and only Canadian ever to do that.
More importantly, and a nice way to do it, he took Schumacher out of the race, did he not? And they collided, and Schumacher ended up, and that was the whole tactic by Schumacher. If you want to watch the documentary on Man Against the Machine, he had done that to Villeneuve, and Villeneuve just said, not happening this time. And so that ended up being where he realized Schumacher's out, and he's going to go and had to finish in the top three to still end up winning it.
On this day in 1997 as well, this is the third thing, Wayne Gretzky had two assists. Assists number 1850 and 1851, which gave him more assists in his career than anyone else had points. Gordie Howe had 1,850 points.
Oh, wow.
Wayne Gretzky had 1,851 assists on this day.
Yeah, again, hard to comprehend. I know some great talent, different time of the 80s, but still look at his numbers. I wonder with modern-day training, and one thing I will say, and he certainly turned into a shell of himself. Do you ever watch a video clip of him racing against, Sugar Ray Leonard, Pele, and somebody else in a 100-meter race? Have you ever watched it, Jared?
Yes.
And again, they're not looking real good, but the look on Sugar Ray Leonard's face at how good Gretzky was, and Gretzky blew away the field.
Yeah.
You just kind of paused and understood. And he had a little, not a tryout, but he had a field day with the Blue Jays as well, did he not? Like he was a pretty avid baseball player.
The story of Wayne Gretzky was, speaking of don't make yourself one-dimensional, he put away the skates in April. And got him back out in September, played baseball all summer, and he was a hell of a baseball player.
Yeah, and you hear that talk, easier said than done, unfortunately, for modern-day sports. But, for myself, God, you always had it. Easter was the end of hockey. You start your soccer and lacrosse, whatever else. And then, Labor Day weekend was always tryouts.
On this day in 2005, the Chicago White Sox beat Houston 1-0 to sweep the Astros and win the World Series, the White Sox first title in 88 years. Of course, don't forget at that point in 2005, the Cubs still hadn't won one. So we're talking about an entire a city with two teams, both of which had gone at that point close to 100 years without winning titles. Wow.
And I don't know. I guess it's almost a bit like the Mets, the White Sox. When you think about Chicago, you think about the Cubs. And I am a big Barack Obama fan. Loved his speech last week, JR. One of my best video clips ever that I love is the interview with him talking about what a great White Sox fan he is his whole life. And they asked him to name his favorite player. Couldn't even come up with a Frank Thomas. He just a deer in headlights, which you don't see with the former president very often.
He's more of a hoops guy.
Yeah. But he's the one that said, hey, you know what? I've been a White Sox fan my whole life.
Well, you would have trouble naming many White Sox.
What?
You get beyond about three, you'd be out. Well, Black Jack McDowell would be one.
Well, I go with Frank Thomas.
Yes, for sure.
What was the crazy manager that managed them that also played for them recently?
Ozzie Guillen?
Yeah.
Did
Ozzie go to the crouch hammer when he was throwing? Was he down with the legs? Was he sitting on his butt as a catcher?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Or was he a catcher?
No, he was a shortstop.
Oh, okay. Well, then he was. Yeah, let's move on.
I apologize, everybody. Mister, I know the White Sox.
Oh, no. I never said that. I said the video clip of Obama. I just never found anything other than Michael Jordan playing in their system.
On this day in 2006, the Buffalo Sabres tied an NHL record for the best start to a season by winning our 10th straight game when they beat the Islanders. That matched the 10-0 start of the 1993-94 Toronto Maple Leafs.
What year was that for Buffalo?
2006.
Jersey? Really?
Yep.
Wow, okay. Interesting coming out of, and here's something funny back to that time a year later. But do you also remember that Darcy Regier was being really heralded in 2005 where they had gone real small? And a lot of people, based on the new rules with the no hooking and holding, they thought that this was going to be the wave of the future for the NHL. So at least for a little while there, based on that, they thought he was a pretty smart fella.
On this day in 2018, the longest World Series game in terms of both innings and time happened when the LA Dodgers got together with the Boston Red Sox in Game 3.
2-2 game, bottom of the 18th inning. Nathan Eovaldi has been terrific. Wonderful, brilliant. Here's Max Muncy. Muncy flies one in the air to left center. Back at the wall, and it's gone! It's over! Muncy, a walk-off home run to win game 3 in the 18th.
That's right, and Joe Buck is excited because he finally gets to go home. 18 innings, 7 hours, and 20 minutes. The Dodgers beat the Red Sox 3-2. Of course, Boston would go on to win the series.
Isn't that glorious to hear fans in the background?
Yes.
And to Joe Buck also teeing up how great the pitcher is, right? I don't know how many times, JR, you're sitting there with scouts in the press box talking about how much a guy sucks, and he usually scores right around that time. So he was teeing. Brilliant. Incredible.
How about this stat? At 7 hours and 20 minutes, that one World Series game took longer than the entire 1939 World Series. Four games.
Yeah
total.
Any idea back then, JR? Like, would games just be an hour? I mean, if that went seven
I think the fastest game was at use. Well, I shouldn't say. I think modern day was like an hour 32, I want to say. I don't know if they played them quicker back
then. And
the
poor
I don't
Joe, know, Buck, 1930s Joe Buck, who worked a different sporting event every day last week.
That's right.
Might have been a little tough on the voice had he gone 18.
Gets a day off today. First day off he's had since, I think, a week ago Saturday.
Good for him.
Sports birthdays today. Very quickly, I mentioned the tie-in to Blue Monday. It's Steve Rogers' 71st birthday today. The guy who unfortunately served up the winning pitch or the winning home run to Rick Monday. Now, Steve Rogers pitched his entire career with the Expos, 158 wins, 152 losses between 1973 and 1985.
Yeah, still a big fan. I guess if you're outside of Montreal, that was your memory. But for a long time, at least my recollection, was the ace of the staff. Did Dave Steeb go start to finish with the Jays, or did he finish off with somebody else at the end? Because I'm just thinking of kind of in not parallel. But if you're talking about best pitch, well, there were better pitchers come along, I guess, if you looked at Pedro. But for people of the 80s, that was really Dave Steeb was the Blue Jays, and Steve Rogers was the Expos.
Yeah, more so. Rogers more in the early
80s.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
And the only other sports birthday of significance is Andrea Bargnani, who really was nothing more than a colossal disappointment. The Raptors had the first pick in the draft in 2006 and took Bargnani, and he was a total washout.
Yeah.
He turns 35 today.
No, I didn't, but also even for... Was the draft here wasn't overly strong, was it, JR?
No, I was just looking at that, actually. Where is the list here? LaMarcus Aldridge, who's still playing, was the number two pick. Remember Adam Morrison out of Gonzaga?
No.
He was the third pick in the draft. He had the really bad stash.
Yeah.
He quickly flamed
out. We've done it a few times, right, where we've looked at the NBA draft, and you just, you know, I know there's misses, but man, oh man, especially when you get into the one and done and some of the European players. And I was going to the 2014 draft because of Reinhart and his arbitration on the weekend, JR. And hey, every team has their hits and misses, but if you want to break down, and you brought it up again last week, that year, but looking at Draisaitl from 3 and I think Pasternak to 25 and kind of everything that goes on in between just shows you how difficult it is when you're drafting 18-year-olds.
Yeah, J.J. Redick, by the way, was in that draft as well.
Okay,
and he's been good and still playing, but that was a very lean draft, 06. Unfortunately, that was the year the Raptors had the first pick. And just one hockey birthday of note today. Celebrating his 44th birthday, and I'm sure having it with a drink, is Mika Kiprusoff, former Calgary Flames goalie. Brought them within a win of a Stanley Cup in 2004, 319 career wins. Mika Kiprusoff is 44 today.
Yeah, and you think back to San Jose loading up and the three-headed monster with Nabokov, Toskal, and Kiprusoff as to why internally the decision was, JR, to flip Kiprusoff for a second-round pick. We later made the bad trade for Toskal, but would you agree that San Jose probably wouldn't win a Stanley Cup if they held on to Kipper?
Yeah, Nabokov always seemed to come up a little bit short.
It was the year
the year that Calgary beat them, right? I think that was the Western Conference Final.
Okay.
04. And I think I remember Nabokov not being necessarily the better of the goalies.
Yeah.
All right, if you're celebrating a birthday today, happy birthday to you on this October 26th. And with that, we will put a wrap on the show as I look outside and watch the snow flying.